like to start telling you a little bit about my life. When I was practicing law in Germany, I had to represent a client, a member of the Worldwide Church of God, who had been fighting for conscientious objector status, but he was not accepted by the wards and had to go to court. And so when he asked me to represent him in front of the judges, I went into a great project of researching everything I could get my hands on, what the church had been writing about and publishing about military service and war. You see, at that time, not unlike as it was in the United States for a time, people who wanted to become conscientious objectors had to prove to the boards that they, in fact, were conscientious objectors. They had the burden of proof. So I went through just about everything the church had to offer at the time, and also looked into other literature from other churches who were likewise opposed to going to war and what they had to say. And of course, one fundamental booklet, which is still in my possession, is the booklet by Mr. Herbert Armstrong, Military Service and War. Now, that booklet was originally written, and let me just look at the copyright and make sure I give you the right date, 1967. And then later, it was republished in 1985, 1 year before Mr. Armstrong died. And he made very clear what the church's position, based on the Bible, on military service and war, has been. Now, I'm bringing this up because today it's easy for most people in the Western world. There is no draft, and even where there is a draft, they can just send in a postcard saying, well, I am a conscientious objector, and then that's accepted. But let's make no mistake. People are already here in the U.S. talking about the reinstating of the draft. And even in the latest presidential Republican debate, this issue came up, and candidates were asked, are you for reinstating the draft? Especially in light of what's happening in Syria, what is happening with terrorist attacks, and so on. So it's very important that we understand, based on the Bible, what God's position is on fighting in war. It's also important that we understand that the church, even as long as Mr. Armstrong was alive, and most certainly after he died, published inconsistent booklets on the matter. Now, as I have just shown you, the booklet on military service and war, I believe, is the foundational booklet on which the church is built when it comes to that particular issue. But another booklet was published subsequent to Mr. Armstrong's booklet, and you all have seen it. You all have read it, I'm sure. The Ten Commandments. Now, this has this particular cover. It has been published with different covers, but the contents was pretty much the same. This was written by Roderick C. Meredith. And if you read that booklet, you will find that the section about killing is completely different from what Mr. Armstrong wrote in Military Service and War. In fact, it is so different that when I had to leave the Worldwide Church of God and was looking into what church to join, I looked at the Global Church of God. But I was aware of Mr. Meredith's comments in the Ten Commandment booklet, and so I wrote. And I also found out that he had just written another booklet in Global about the Ten Commandments, where he had pretty much reiterated what he had said in the Ten Commandment booklet, which was in total opposition to what Mr. Armstrong had written. And so I wrote in, because to me this was an extremely important factor. And I was told at the time that, yeah, there is an inconsistency, but I was given the understanding that the inconsistency was resolved in favor of what Mr. Armstrong had taught. Only later, while in Global, I realized that the inconsistency was quote-unquote solved in favor of what Dr. Meredith had written. And one minister even told me that. He said, well, I see there's an inconsistency, but I follow Mr. Meredith's. The inconsistency has a lot to do, and I talked about these things with Mr. Meredith, but it didn't bring about any solution. It has a lot to do with the question, did Israel sin when they fought in Old Testament times? Did David sin when he fought in war? Now, Mr. Armstrong made it very clear that they did, that they committed murder when they fought in Old Testament times. Mr. Meredith took the position, no, they did not break any law. It was perfectly all right to fight in Old Testament times because, and that's how the argument goes, killing in war is not murder. And the further argument goes that when God prohibits killing in the Ten Commandments, he excludes killing in war. Now, this has dramatic consequences. Now, worldwide, after Mr. Armstrong died, of course, totally did away with the concept that killing in war is wrong. And they have come to the point where they advocate Christians, so-called Christians, to fight in certain quote-unquote righteous wars. And one example is always given, the Americans fighting against the evil forces of Nazi Germany in World War II. One other Church of God group has some time back already declared that it is a duty of a Christian to fight in war if it is a quote-unquote righteous war. Now, as Dr. Hay mentioned many years ago, and he was absolutely right in this, that voting in governmental elections, serving on the jury, and fighting in war go hand in hand. Now, some Church of God groups today have not gone as far yet as saying that fighting in war is right, but they have most certainly gone so far as to allow voting in governmental elections and also serving on the jury. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I recently came across a sermon by another former minister of the Worldwide Church of God, the late Garnard Ted Armstrong. I found this sermon when I looked at one of our sermons which were posted on YouTube, and then on the right side you always have these quote-unquote other entries, and here was one by Garnard Ted Armstrong. I said, oh, I'm going to listen to this one because it had to do with war. He made the same wrong argument which others have made in the Worldwide Church of God, and that is that when it says you shall not kill in Exodus chapter 20 and in verse 13, one of the Ten Commandments, the Hebrew word is actually ratzach, R-A-T-S-A-C-H, and that word does not mean killing in war. It only refers to murder. And they say that when killing in war is described, another word is used in the Hebrew. But it's interesting that the Authorized Version, the Revised Standard Version, the New American Bible, and the New Jerusalem Bible all translate Exodus 20:17, you shall not kill. But the more modern translations, such as the New King James Bible, or the NIV, or the Living Bible, they translate, you shall not murder. And some of the, quote-unquote, progressively minded liberal ministers have adopted that concept. Oh, it's only talking about murder. and killing in war isn't murder, so they say. And they say when the idea is used that people are being described as killing in war, another Hebrew word is used, and that word is harag, H-A-R-A-G, a different word. And they say this word does not mean murder, so when they kill in war, that's no murder, because the word for murder is ratzach, so they say. You see, what's wrong about it is the fact that the word harag is describing murder. And so let's look at a few scriptures right now to make this point very clear. Let's look at the book of Psalms, chapter 10. Psalms, chapter 10, and verse 8. Now remember the argument. The argument is when the word harag is used, that doesn't mean murder. All right, that's the argument. Psalm 10 and verse 8. He sits in the lurking places of the villages. In the secret places he murders the innocent. But the word is ratzach. I'm sorry, the word is harag. The word is harag, which allegedly doesn't mean murder. But here it's clearly translated correctly as murder. Let's look at another one. Hosea chapter 9. Hosea chapter 9 and verse 13. Hosea 9 and verse 13. Another word where the word harag is used. Just as I saw Ephraim like Tyre planted in a pleasant place, so Ephraim will bring out his children to the murderer. All right? Let's look at another one in Jeremiah chapter 4. Jeremiah chapter 4 and in verse 31. Jeremiah 4 and verse 31. For I have heard a voice as a woman in labor, the anguish as of her who brings forth a first child, the voice of the daughter of Zion, bewailing herself, who spreads her hands, saying, woe is me now, for my soul is weary because of murderers. The word which is used for killing in war is defined here as murder. Notice another one in Genesis chapter 4. Now that should give us a clue as to how God looks at this quote-unquote alleged distinction, which isn't really a distinction. Now Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose against Abel his brother and killed him. So here we find that Abel was killed by his brother. The word again is harag. Okay, now how does the Bible in the New Testament describe that incident? Was it something like an accidental death? Or was it intentional? Was it murder? 1 John chapter 3 and verse 12. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 12. Here John is saying, don't be as Cain, who was of the wicked one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brother's were righteous. So, obviously, Cain killed his brother, harag in the Hebrew, but that word means murder. Now, let's look at James chapter 4, another New Testament passage, which associates killing in war with murder. James 4, beginning in verse 1. Where do wars and fights come among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war. Now the word for war, you fight and war, other translations have here, you fight and wage war, is polemio, just as in passing, a Greek word polemio, which means fighting in war. In Revelation 17:14, it's used, it talks about people making war with a lamb. The noun polemos means war. It's used in Revelation 12 and verse 7, where we read that the 10 kings will make war with the Lamb. But where it says here, you fight in war, you murder, and covet and cannot obtain, the word for murder there is phoneo. This word is used by Christ in Matthew 5:21 and also in Matthew 19, verse 18, in quoting the Ten Commandments, in quoting the statement, you shall not kill. And here in James, we find that killing in war is murder. That's the equation. So the whole argument that you can make a distinction between this Hebrew word ratzach and the Hebrew word harak, saying the one only refers to murder and the other one refers to killing but not murder, and so killing in war is fine, is just absolutely not only ridiculous, it is unbiblical and it is ungodly. On the other hand, if you even look at the Hebrew word ratzach, which is admittedly talking about quote-unquote murder, right? That's what these guys are saying. You know that the word is also used for not only intentional, hateful killing, but it's also applied to accidental killing. That word is applied to accidental killing. Numbers chapter 35 and verse 25. So this blows away completely, this argument. Because notice what it says in Numbers 35 and verse 25. So the congregation shall deliver the manslayer, it's translated here, but the word in the Hebrew is ratzach, the same word, which is used in Exodus, talking about the Ten Commandments, shall deliver the manslayer from the hand of the avenger of blood, and the congregation shall return him to the city of refuge where he had fled, and he shall remain there until the death of the high priest who was anointed with the holy oil. You see, if somebody accidentally killed somebody else, the penalty for that wasn't death. The penalty was he had to go to a place of refuge to stay there until the high priest died. But the Bible still says it's wrong. Even accidental killing is wrong because you should have taken precautions so that this accidental killing wouldn't have taken place. That, in the biblical terminology, is also murder, ratzach. But the death penalty wasn't inflicted on such a person. It was the place of safety. You see, accidental killing even is murder in the eyes of God. To kill innocent civilians in war is killing, is murder in the eyes of God. Which means a Christian cannot participate in it one way or the other. He will be guilty of murder in the eyes of God if he does so. I'm talking about this present evil world, of course. What we need to do, brethren, is to stay away from these worldly concepts we are hearing about all the time. Oh, we got to fight now in war against these terrorists. We got to do something for our country by joining the military. We have to be good patriots. Oh, we should have guns given to teachers, given to students on campus so that they can defend themselves against attackers. We have to arm ourselves when we go to a concert, when we go to a theater, so that we can shoot back when people shoot at us. And on and gone, the ideas go. None of that is godly. None of that comes from God. You know, I have seen over the years how people with wrong ideas, wrong concepts, even in the church, even ministers in the church, can deceive people, can be guilty of innocent blood, because by giving these kind of wrong teachings, and people are following those wrong teachings and then going to war, these guys who have been making these false statements will be held accountable. We have to be very careful that we don't fall into the same trap and lose our sound sight. Let's not make the mistake thinking, oh, we can just vote in governmental elections, and then we can put somebody in place who is the chief commander of an army who then goes to war? Or we just serve on the jury because we might as well convict somebody, and who cares whether the guy was innocent or guilty? That is terrible in the eyes of God. And it's going to lead to the next step, joining the military. I can guarantee it. I've seen it so many times. It's going to happen. And actually, the Bible warns about this development. Now, in a few minutes, Michael Link will give a sermon about God's power. I don't know whether he's going to talk about this aspect or not, but let me just conclude by saying, when we think that we must fight in war, we are limiting God in our minds. We are saying, oh, we must do something which God cannot do for us. We are denying God's power. Let us not do that.